If you're anything like me, you spent your childhood assuming that one day you'd meet your Prince Charming. You'd get married, you'd have a nice house in the suburbs, a dog, a career, and a couple of kids. It never crossed your mind that Prince Charming wouldn't come along, or that tragically you'd lose him before his time, or that your marriage wouldn't work out, or even that your biological clock would have other ideas. Or maybe you never really wanted that sort of happily ever after. Maybe you never wanted a man, but you did know you always wanted children. We're living in an age where, for the first time, women can embrace motherhood on their own terms. They no longer have to put their lives on hold waiting for the right man, or settling for someone who they know isn't right for them, just so they can become a mother. More women than ever before are embarking on the journey to become what's known as a solo mother by choice. And while for a lot of us it doesn't feel like a choice, but more a necessity, the bottom line is there are now options for you to be able to fulfill your dreams of motherhood if the traditional route isn't playing out as expected. The No Need for Prince Charming podcast will share stories of Australian women who have successfully become solo mothers by choice. They each have a unique story as to why they decided to pursue motherhood in this way and the journey they had to go through to make this dream a reality. The hope is that by sharing these stories, you'll have the knowledge and the confidence to embark on this amazing journey yourself if you determine it's the right one for you. In the words of Walt Disney, all of our dreams can come true if we have the courage to pursue them. All you need is faith, trust, and a little bit of pixie dust. Today's episode is proudly sponsored by City Fertility, global leaders in fertility and IVF care. Did you know that City Fertility have their own sperm bank? It's called Adam. With no waiting times and a wide selection of donors featuring diverse characteristics, ethnicities, and backgrounds to choose from, finding the perfect match for your journey has never been easier. Download the Adam app now or visit www.adamdonorbank.com.au to begin your search. So welcome to the podcast today, Trudy. I would love to start by understanding a little bit about who you were before you decided to go down this path to become a solo mum by choice.
Why is that a hard question? I was a massive traveler before all this. So I was every year I pretty much would travel to a different country.
Brilliant.
Or I'd do several trips around Australia myself. So I was constantly on the go, constantly traveling, going out a fair bit. So pretty active social life that I had.
Yeah.
And I just sort of got to the point where I just sort of hadn't really met anyone. And everyone keeps telling me, they're like, oh, you have to, you know, put yourself out there. And I definitely was putting myself out there. So I guess before I looked along that, and everyone in my family, like I'm a big family person. So all my brothers and sisters had children and I was the only one who didn't. But I was a very active aunt. Yeah. And I really loved there was times where I was like, oh, I should just move away and, you know, try to meet someone. But then I sort of looked at my life and went, well, no, because if I move away, I'll be moving away from the family and moving away from my nieces and nephews. And, yeah, I really loved sort of looking after them. You know, I used to look after them some weekends. I helped my brothers out, my sisters out. And, yeah, it was really – I just loved the auntie life, really. I guess I was a big auntie. And then I was like, no, I definitely want kids of my own. And I always envisioned that I would have kids. So, yeah.
Can you remember what moment it was that you decided, well, I'm just going to do this on my own?
It was probably about 3-4 years ago. I guess I was sitting talking to my sisters and, you know, I was like, I definitely, you know, want kids. And, you know, they're all like, oh, we're getting older now. And, you know, one sister was going through IVF herself and she's like, you know, the older you get, she was a bit older. She was in her 40s when she had her kids, but she had IVF and she's like, you know, it's getting older, your eggs are not getting any better. And so it was just sort of that moment when I went, well, I guess I could think about it. And I was like, yeah, I'll definitely do it before at 37. So I was and then I got to 37 and hadn't met anyone yet. And I was like, right, okay, this is the year that I sort of said that I would look into IVF.
Yeah.
If I hadn't found it, I was 37 and that's kind of what I did. And yeah, and it wasn't until, I guess, I was 39 until I actually went through. So, yeah.
And was anyone surprised when you said that you were going to do this on your own, or were they all supportive?
So my family was really supportive. My family's quite close, so my auntie found out, like my cousin, I'm close to my cousin, and she obviously on my auntie, and they're like, oh, you should so do it. It's so much easier to do it. You know, you don't need a man. Like, you don't need a man to hold you. You know, look at what, you know, my cousin was going through at the time, you know, having to, I guess she had custody and, you know, the ex is not very good and having like all that whole process with them. And they're like, you know, there's nothing wrong with you. You're a strong woman. You know, you can do this. And I was like, yeah, I can. but it still took me a while because, like, my grandma and them wasn't quite supportive. So I'm very, like, I'm from a Christian family. And that was a bit of a battle, even in myself, to sort of go, is it okay to do it by myself? You know, and so there was a few little doubts sort of there, and especially because my grandma was like, oh no, you're meant to meet someone, and you've got to get married, and you know, then you'll find someone, it'll just happen. And I was like, yeah, but it's not happening. And I was like, there's science out there that allows you. And she goes, oh well, you know, like I was saying that my sister went through IVF, and she goes, they went through, and she goes, yeah, but she had a partner and you don't. And you know, so there was a little doubt. Like now she's fine. She's sort of come to terms with it. And you know, my great auntie as well, you know, they were all sort of, yeah, so that put a big doubt in my mind sort of thing because of that, and because I am Christian as well. And I was like, well, I don't know. And then I just did some research and found out that, you know, other people are doing it, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like, you know, we have developed science, like that's what science is about. Like, you know, they've come to terms with, and there are people who are single mothers, you know, and they not necessarily chose that path, and you know, they're struggling. Whereas I thought, me choosing, at least I know what I'm getting myself into.
I guess you're probably fortunate that your sister had gone through IVF, so in terms of having someone to talk to about what fertility treatment would be like, you had a sounding board for that, which is, I think, for a lot of people,
yeah,
the scariest part of it all, that unknown. So that was lucky.
Yeah. And I think that's what, like I said, once I sort of put it out there, and my sister was like, oh, I know someone that's done that. I know someone. So I guess by association, I've sort of found out. And like I said, I did the ring around to a few agencies and spoke to the nurses and that sort of thing. And that sort of gave me, and they gave me some videos to watch and things. And
no, great.
Those. And then once I did a counselling session, they also gave me some things to watch as well. And I, you know, so I sort of read those things, and like it was more like journal articles and that sort of thing. So I read a few like articles about what people have done, and obviously you're saying you're writing a book, so that's something that I would have found really handy, opposed to going onto social media and like scrolling for groups and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm more into that sort of side of reading journals and things like that. So, and then I'm like, oh, and then so I read a few and I'm like, I can do this, like it's not that hard, like it's, and it's, and it's like the stigma behind it, I guess, that I had, that I needed a partner. Sort of, it was more in my head. And obviously because of my religious background and, you know, my grandma and that sort of thing, I was kind of like, oh, can I do this? And then it was more, I guess, myself, self-talk going, yes, you can. Like it's, there's nothing wrong with it. You can
now
do
you're
this
on the other side of it. You're like, damn, yeah, of course I can do it.
Yeah, and I think it actually was my cousin who said to me, she's like, she just spent basically, oh, actually, no, it was one of my really good friends, and she said that she always wanted to do it. She's a lot older, and she's like, I always wanted to, I think she's like 12 years older than me or something. She's like a teacher friend, and she said, I've always wanted to do it, and she goes, I was too afraid to do it. And she goes, I have the utmost respect and admiration for you for doing this, Trudy. Like it's, you know, because I so wanted to do it. She's like, I really, really wanted to do it. And I just didn't feel like I had the willpower like to do it. And she's like, and I'm so in awe of you. Yeah. So, and that was because I told her I was going to do it. And that's when, and I was like, oh, actually, yeah. Like I just said I was thinking of doing it. But, yeah, when she said that, I was like, oh, okay, I can do this, yeah. like, it was December and I was extremely busy and I just went, nah, it's time now. And I'm like, if I don't do it, I don't do it. And you know what? It's going to take 4 to 5 times.
That's what you thought going into it?
Yeah, I was like, it's going to take 4 or 5 times. Just go in, and I can only afford to do a couple of times. Like, if it's not meant to be, it's not meant to be. Like, if it's not meant to be, I'm not meant to have kids. And that's kind of the way I looked at my, with my grandma. I sort of said, I said, look, grandma, it's still in God's hands. So it still really is in God's hands. So if I'm meant to have kids by doing this, I will have them. If not, then I won't be successful. So it still really is, you know.
Did that help her a little bit process it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually. Yeah. And I think that's what she sort of, and that's kind of when she came around as well, and with my auntie as well. And it was like my auntie's sister that talked to her and was like, look, what Trudy's doing is really empowering, and it's good. And they all, and it was the whole, it still is sign, it still is God's choice if it happens. Like, if it takes, you know, it still is for it to take, you know what I mean? Like, it's not science making it take.
It makes me a little bit emotional actually hearing how, like, you talked your grandma around and how she could see it as being God's way, and it's just, oh,
oh yeah, no.
Having a day.
Yeah, because my mum was all like, oh, you know, do it, you can do it and everything. But, yeah, but it was more, I guess, my grandma that I was sort of wanting to, and I guess having her kind of, and then when I actually told her I was pregnant, she was like, oh, what? What? And I'm like, grandma, you knew I was doing IVF. And she's, yeah, but. Really?
God
and so
okay. Yeah,
like, oh, so it worked. And I was like, yes. Like, and I was like, and I said to her, I said, yeah, God wanted it to happen, like, it was meant to be, you know. So but yeah, so yeah.
So everyone was, it was around you and supportive, and then you started treatment. How did you go with selecting the donor? Was it a hard process?
So not really. They obviously just send you, they send you a list of possible donors. It took a while to find a donor, actually. So I thought it wouldn't take that long, but it actually did. So I, they explained to me that in Queensland, they can donate up to 10 families. In New South Wales, they do it up to 5. Victoria, I think it's 15 or 10, and WA it's around the same, 10 or something. And I basically went, well, then if you go internationally, it's up to 27 families, and then plus in their own country where they're from, they can donate again. And so that was kind of the deciding factor of what state I wanted to get a donor from. So okay. Yeah, so I basically was like, well, because like, it can happen that you can meet people, and I sort of wanted the, like, I wanted someone, I wanted them not to have too many siblings, I guess I don't know, watching those shows where like people donated up to, you know, someone has 110 sisters or brothers, that sort of thing. And that kind of was like, oh, I don't want that. Like, that was very daunting. I'm like, I don't want that. So then I was like, well, I don't want someone from overseas because I don't want that to happen. Yeah. Plus I also, because I'm a big traveler, I don't want them to travel and then meet a sibling but not know it's a sibling, you know. Like, I don't sort of to happen as well. And then I don't want them to have to feel like would have to ask someone, you know, and say, oh, are you you know, are your parents together, are you like, I don't want that awkward conversation to have to sort of be in their mind going, I've got to do that before I maybe meet someone, because I could possibly meet a sibling of 150 or something. Yeah. Anyways, I do that, and I know that they don't do that anymore. They sort of cut it. They have a cap on things to try to stop that. But there are a lot of, because I did hear a lot of that, and people were like, oh, why don't you just, you know, there's apps where people can just, you can just, people are donating their sperm, so you just take it off there. I was like, yeah, but it's not regulated, and it's not, I'm like, how many people do they give that to? Like, they could have given their sperm to, like, you know, 80 people. And then, you know, like, I don't know that. You don't know that. And I was like, no, I'm definitely not doing that. So obviously I had to go through an agency because I wanted that. Yeah, and so, and 5 was, like, I was like, 5 families? Like, that's something that I could, you know, 5 families is okay. They've got met possibly five siblings, maybe even more.
Yep.
but from five families, you know, like five. Yeah. And I just thought that was nicer for me. That was doable. I just didn't look at the other states. I only looked at New South Wales, but it was also around COVID time. So not many people had been donating. So within Australia, they don't get paid to donate. So a lot of people do it sort of selflessly, but because of COVID, not many people were coming in and donating. So it was a very slim sort of choice of who to choose from. And I also didn't want, like, when it came to like ethnicity.
Yep.
Yes, that's it. I was thinking, being a teacher myself, seeing kids who are from either a broken family or single family, a lot of kids kind of have it tough anyway. And it shouldn't be, and it is getting better, but kids are cruel. So I wanted to sort of limit as much as that as can. I'm like, well, they're already going to be faced with, like, who's your dad?
Yeah.
You know, dad, like, where is he's not around, and, you know, is they're already going to face that. I can't stop what other kids do, but I can. So I was like, well, you know, I don't want them to have if it comes to like culture as well. So for example, not that I'm against it, like if I met someone that had a different background, I would gladly have children, but being a single mother choosing a donor, I didn't want my children to, I also wanted them to know where they're from, and I wanted to, and then I wouldn't be able to, I don't know, I wouldn't be able to raise them within a different culture because I don't know, you know, as much as I could sort of go, oh, yes, you know, but I wouldn't know as much for it.
Yeah.
And that's sort of another way that I kind of, I guess, was like, oh, okay, well, then I'm looking for, you know, different, yeah, backgrounds, I guess. I don't know. I don't want that to sound like.
No, it's very, very common that most people are looking for the same ethnic background because they want their children to look as similar to them as possible and not have to deal with, you know, cultural differences that they might not be aware of or be able to do a good enough job of. So most people, I think, like that.
You said better than I.
I've interviewed a lot of people.
You said that so much better. But that's what I basically got. Yeah, it was like looking at me. And then plus a lot of it was because I didn't want to, and I don't know about a culture raising someone. I wouldn't know to be able to do that. So that's another. And then especially like, yeah, and I don't want kids to, again, be like, oh, you don't look like your mom, you don't look like your dad, and that sort of thing. And I know when people, so I've got actually adopted cousins, they're not really cousins, they're close family friends, but they both had a mum and dad, and, you know, and they, you talk to them and they say that they had a lot of confrontation, like people would, they got teased a lot because they don't look like their parents, and it's like, oh. And kids can be quite cruel, and, you know, they were
horrible, aren't they?
They are horrible. Like one of my cousins, he was okay with it, but the other one, the younger one, took it very differently and it affected him a lot.
Mm.
Even though like he loves his parents and everything, but it affected him a lot because, you know, he was teased a lot and that was really hard for him dealing with. Anyway, so I just wanted to limit that as much as possible. Yeah. And I guess that sort of narrowed down who I was looking for. I also went in and looked at genes, the gene mm-hmm. pool. So I got tested myself, actually. So I wanted to make sure that I did every test to see if my genes as well, to see compatibility of, you know, because a lot of genes that you have to have two traces of it for it to come out. And so I didn't want to have, I wanted to limit that as well.
But it can be amazing what you learn about yourself and your own health when you go through these sort of things that other people wouldn't be aware of, isn't it?
Yes, yes, definitely. I was like, okay, rightio, that makes sense. I didn't realize that, but knowing, yeah. So I guess finding out, and I did, and plus I also didn't want the option because there's a lot of like medical expenses and everything added to it if you do have a child who has, say, spina bifida. Not that I would love them any different, but there's a lot added, you know, risk. And I was like, well, I might as well. If you're paying for this, going through you doing this, you might as well find out your traits and find someone that's compatible genetically to be able to have the best
chance.
Best chance and best option. So, yeah, so that was another process. And, yeah, it probably, I think it was like every month I would message the Monash IVF, a Monash donor. And I would say, oh, is there a new list in today? And they're like, oh, next week we'll send you one. And so I was just constantly, I think it was like every 3 months a new list came through. Mm-hmm. So basically it was like 3 months I would like email them and go, so can you please send me a new list? And, you know, I just kept getting updates. And then my donor came up and I was like, yep, it's, you know, there's a few things that came up on his side. But then because I didn't have the genetics for it, and it worked, and I was like, you know what, that's fine.
That's my donor.
That's the donor. And yeah, the traits, and I guess sort of my, like, he had like English background, my family's from England as well, so there was like, I was like, oh, okay, well, that, you know, there's just a few little things. And they sent some photos, and I didn't really go off the photos, like I didn't, they were just like baby photos, but that wasn't a key thing that I was looking for. It was more about the genetic traits and finding that out.
Did you involve your mum or your family at all with your selecting a donor, or just did it on your own?
I pretty much did it on my own. I think one of my good friends, she looked, you know, a few came through and like, oh, there's like two or three, there was two options, and, you know, we both sort of had a look at it and was like, oh, this has got this gene pool, and oh, you know, he's quite smart, and oh, this is, you know, and just sort of that sort of, oh, you know, he's a lawyer, or he does this, or, you know, oh, this one here is a technician or something, you know, they're going through like their jobs because their jobs are listed, and they're like, oh, look at this, and like, so a lot of that. But to be honest, when I thought going through, I honestly thought you would have like a photo book, and I thought they'll send you like a photo book, and it basically will be based on like pictures and photos, and you sort of choose the eye color and that sort of thing from there. But it's not like that. It's all written.
I blame American movies and sitcoms for that.
That's because one of my girlfriends were like, oh, come over and I'll flip through the photo book with you. And I was like, it's actually not a photo book. It's, you know, she's like, I'll bring some wine and we'll sit down and we'll look through the photo book and find a gorgeous. But, you can come and bring wine and we'll sit down. But it's.
There's a Friends episode where Rachel's considering it. And yeah, they look through the book. Like that.
Yep. And I think that's where we all, like, because I honestly thought that's what it would be like until I actually did it.
Yeah. So many of us think the same. It's like, where's my book?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, to have like hundreds to look through as well. And it's like, what do you mean there's four?
So. Yeah, that's all it was. It was like, and then, like I said, every 3 months I was like, can you send me more? Can you send me more? Because I chose the New South Wales list. I was only looking at the New South Wales list.
Yeah.
And then also, there were ones on there that if you wanted to do IUI, that you could only select, and some you couldn't select. So some of the donors you couldn't choose if you were planning on doing IUI.
Yeah. Did you consider doing IUI, or did you just went straight to IVF?
I did, actually. At first I thought that's probably what I would do. I thought, yeah, let's try that because it's like most natural sort of way of doing it. But then I, after speaking to the doctors, they basically said, look, your best options would be an embryo IVF. And I was like, okay, sure.
And is that primarily age-related, do you think? Or?
I think it was age related. So, but because I called Adora first, so I called a different agency because I wanted to see if I could freeze my eggs. So mm-hmm. my first point of call was to freeze my eggs first. I was like, right, I'm getting old enough. I'm going to freeze my eggs until I meet someone. At least my eggs will be at age 37, I think it was, when I first caught up. And Adora basically said, so I went and doctor and I got a few scans done and everything, and they came back and they read them and said, look, your best option is, if you're serious about it, he goes, because of your age, you'll probably have to do several cycles to collect enough eggs to be able to freeze them. Yes, sure, you can freeze one or two eggs that you get, but the best viable option is to probably freeze more than one or two eggs, because of your age we may possibly only collect one or two eggs. That sort of those, and I was like, oh, okay. And then he's like, yeah, you best to do embryos. And Adora didn't do that at the time that I called up. They may possibly do it now, but they didn't do it then because they had to do a donor. They're like, we don't store embryos.
Right.
Get a donor. And well, of course, I needed a donor as well. They're like, we don't do that. So I'm like, okay, no worries. So then that's when I looked at Monash and IVF Australia. And yeah, and I basically called them up and they said, oh, and when on my first appointment, they said, yeah, the best option is probably to do IVF. And then I think I did, can't remember the acronym, but they chose select the sperm as well.
Yeah.
So
ICSI.
ICSI, that's it. I was like, I looked up before I came and I'm like, I need to remember this term, ICSI. So then they did ICSI as well because
yeah.
they said
they find the best little sperm and they stick it right into the egg themselves. Yeah.
Yeah.
Rather than waiting for them to get together in a petri dish.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So I only had six eggs. So they collected six eggs from me. And so an option of waiting and doing another egg collection if I wanted to. And I was like, no, let's go for it. Like, let's use it.
Yeah.
And then they sort of did it, and then only four made it through day two. Like, mm-hmm. so four. No, yeah, so they collected five, six, and then only four were successfully implanted. And then on day three, I think it dropped back down to two, and then on day day five, I only had one left. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, we can freeze it or we can implant. And I said, implant, I only need one.
And you do?
Yep.
Only takes one.
I was like, I went in it going, I only need one, but you know, really, it's okay. I'll probably have to do a few more. But I just went, you know what? I only need one. Let's try it. Let's see how we go. Yeah. And that's all I needed. There's one and it's split and I have to. So
that was not amazing. The plan, was it?
Well, two wasn't, definitely. And I honestly, I had a cruise booked and everything. And I was thinking I'll be pregnant on the cruise, not a baby and not be able to go on the cruise. So, and then it was also my 40th birthday that year. And I also thought that I'll be pregnant, but not have a baby. So I planned a birthday party and I was going away and I couldn't do it because I had newborns, like, because they basically would have been 2 months old. So wow. I was like, yeah, so, but because I thought that it would take me a while to actually.
So you had all these things booked before you even started treatment, assuming it was going to take a few months.
Yeah. Everything booked. Yep.
You just jinxed it all and just made it happen, didn't you?
Yeah. That's right. Like, well, that's the way to do it, right?
Because so go book lots of things and you'll never be able to do them because your cycle will work first time. Okay.
Yeah, that's what you do, right? Well, because everyone keeps telling me, they're like, oh, yeah, everyone said it won't work the first time. They're like, oh, look, even my doctor, she was blown away. She found out. Even doubly blown away the fact that I was having twins because she told me that I wouldn't have them.
She basically,
and no one, the likelihood is no, because we'll just put one in. We're not going to put any more. You know, there's no chance. And I'm like, okay, no worries.
Random question, like, but do you know what at what point they they split? Because obviously on day five you've got a blastocyst. Like, how long after it is that they
become twins? Because I had MCGA twins, so they split between day five and day seven.
So if they'd left it like one more day, they would know pretty much. Wow, that's weird.
No. As in the hospital, they would know? No. So it could have split day seven. You know what I mean? So it could have split on day seven. So because, yeah, so it's, they could have split in the petri dish, but they didn't because it was implanted day five.
Fascinating, isn't it, when you think about it like that? Like, you know so much about this little blastocyst, and then 2 days later, surprise, I'm going to split on you.
Yeah, and I was like, hang on. And then I was like, hang on, how do you know when it's split? And they're like, oh, because, and then that's how they knew that they were identical as well. Mm. So because they had the same, because they were sharing the same placenta, which means that, like, they have to be identical because they're sharing the same placenta. They can't be two, like, they could be two separate eggs and then have two separate placentas, and the placenta can join. Okay. And then that's how you can have twins who are fraternal, who have the same placenta, just because they're the placenta. I mean, it joined. But
you only had one egg, so.
I only had one egg. And I said to the lady when she did the scan, I was like, what? And she's like, because she asked me, she goes, oh, so I'm just wondering how many eggs they put in. I said, oh, just one. She said, you know, we only put in one now. And blah, blah. And so I was like, just sat talking about blah. And she's like, okay, really? And I was like, yeah, really. And then I was like, wait there, why? She's like,
what are you seeing?
Because I was seeing whatever on the screen. I have no idea what I was looking at. And she's like,
gloves,
yeah, because there's two. And I was like, what? So yeah, it was crazy because they, because originally they did. I had to do an external scan on day 10. And then she did an internal one. She's like, because she said she couldn't get a good view of my placenta. So she goes, I need to do an internal. And I was like, oh, okay. And so it was the internal told her that I had to, yeah.
Wow.
It was just, yeah, crazy. I was like, I don't know if I should be crying or laughing. I just don't know. I'm like, this is not possible. Basically, I was like, this is not possible.
And she's I only signed up for one. Yep.
Yeah. This is possible. And then obviously after speaking to the doctor, she's like, oh yeah, there was like less than 0.5% chance that the egg could have split. And I was like, what?
Oh, I'm that one. That 0.5%. Yeah.
Okay. It was odds in my favor. And that's what I said to my grandma. I was like, see, grandma, it's really meant to be.
Yeah.
Like, I was really meant to have kids and God wanted me to have children. So
he gave me two, so I didn't have to go back.
That's right. I don't have to do it again. I can't believe I did it the first round. I cannot. That was really blowing me away, actually, the fact that it happened first go. It knocked me for six. I was just like, what?
I'm going on a cruise and I'm having a birthday party. What do you mean it worked?
Yeah, yep. Cruise, birthday party. Like, I was like, oh, I expected to be, like I said, pregnant and I won't be drinking, but that's all I expected. I do feel bad sometimes talking to other people who are doing IVF and it takes them a long time. I feel bad just because everyone asks, and I feel bad to say, oh, it happened first go. Like, I do get a little bit of a guilt because I know the process is so daunting. And if I had to do it more, you know, several times, but I was prepared to do it several times, I think, going into it. So I didn't think maybe that's the difference. Like, I went in going, you know what, it's going to take me a while, it's okay. And I think maybe that's, I don't know, maybe that's why. I've no idea. I don't know.
I guess it's one of those things as well. Yes, you were a bit older, but other than that, there's no reason to believe that there was anything wrong with your fertility to need it to take more than one, really. So maybe it would have worked UI as well.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it could have. I've never tried, because the doctors asked me, they're like, have you tried to fall pregnant before? It's like, well, I'm single and I've been single for a while, and no, I haven't. They're like, oh, are you sure you haven't tried? I'm like, I haven't tried to have a baby before. Like,
I think that's one of the things, though, like, most of the stats for IVF success rates are based on couples that have a fertility issue to need IVF. So it's really hard to know, you know, how likely is it that you could be successful straight away if you don't have any fertility complications, which obviously you didn't.
Okay, and that's That's right. Well, who knows? That's right. I could have met someone and had it straight away if I tried. But we don't know. The only thing they said to me was that I just had, you know, my egg count, because I was getting older, my egg count was dropping off. So, and that's the only, I guess, indication of having lower fertility was because of that.
So being identical and sharing the same placenta, was there some, was that a quite a high risk pregnancy?
No, yes, it was. So I had, I was actually traveling to Newcastle every week, started weekly. So I went there and they said, oh, look, you know, every 2 weeks you need to, every 2 weeks you need to be having a scan because you're MCDA twins sharing the same placenta. And I was like, okay. And they're like, oh, in Coffs Harbour, which is where I'm from, they said to me that, don't worry, you'll do one in Newcastle and then one in Coffs Harbour. So you'll be traveling to Newcastle once a month. And I was like, oh, okay, that's, you know, that's doable. Went to Newcastle and they're like, no, you need to be back here next week. And I was like, what? Mm-hmm. They're like, no, we need to monitor this. And I was like, okay. And so for the first, I think it was month, I was going weekly. And then, and I was like, are you sure I can't get any of these scans done in Coffs Harbour? And they're like, no, you need to do it here. And I was like, okay. And then it went to fortnightly.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I was having it fortnightly, and then it went back to weekly. And then when it was fortnightly, I was like, are you sure I can't have any? Like, I kept saying to them, are you sure I can't go to Coffs Harbour? Like, everything's good. They're like, well, everything's okay, but it's, we're monitoring it. I said, there could be any chance now, you know, it couldn't be okay. Like, it won't be okay. And the best option, because some, you may get a really good sonographer in Coffs Harbour, but they don't do this all the time. Like, they're not constantly looking at MCDA twins, and they don't always know, you know, whereas where that's what they do, I guess. And we can be on top of it. And they just went, okay, well, sure. Like, it's for the twins and I'll do the best I can. And that's the best thing for them. So I had to travel to Newcastle every week. Yeah, like I said, weekly, then I went fortnightly, then I went back to weekly. And then towards the end, so from 32 weeks, it went to twice a week. And then, so, and then when I was 34, I went there Friday, and then I had to go back there again on Tuesday. And it was my great uncle's birthday in Sydney. And I was like, oh, 2 hours, like, it's actually closer to drive to Sydney than it is to come all the way back to Coffs Harbour. And then, well, I've got to go all the way back to Newcastle anyway. So I was like, I'll go to Sydney, stay, and then go back to Newcastle on Tuesday. And I had the twins. So the party was on Saturday. I had the twins on Sunday in Sydney.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So I went in with it. I had pains in my stomach, and my sister and my mum were like, oh, they're just, you know, Braxton Hicks, you know, you're getting on, they said. And I said, yeah, but they're not going. Like, it's not going away. Like, it's not coming and then going away. It's sort of, it's constant and it's painful and it's not going. Everyone's like, lie down. So it was about 30 minutes and I was lying down at my sister's house and I was like, it's still there. And I said, the doctor said if I had any unusual pain, I need to go to the hospital. So, and they're like, oh, okay. My mum was like, oh, are you sure? And I was like, And my sister called a friend and she's like, oh, you probably should come in. I was like, yeah, I'm coming in. and so the closest hospital to her was Northern Beaches Hospital. So I went into Northern Beaches Hospital and they just didn't know what was wrong. And then to top it all off, the lady said, I've got to call the specialist in. And I was like, oh, okay, no worries. And then he walks in and it's my friend.
No pressure, but you are responsible for getting my babies out of here in one piece. Thank you very much. Otherwise, I'm never talking again.
Like, I was really stressed and obviously like, I was like freaking out, going, oh my goodness, I don't know what's going on and I'm in pain and whatever. And then he came in and I was instantly like laughing. It was just meant to be, obviously. And then he's like, oh, look, he goes, your tests have come back and there's no explanation for this pain. He goes, there could have been four or five different options for why you're having this pain. He goes, but you know what? And they've all come back and you don't have those issues. And he goes, so I think it's a placenta abruption. And I was like, what? No way. And he goes, Yep. And he goes, then you would be having them now. Had the baby and we had an emergency cesarean. So within 3 hours, I was in and out of the hospital. I kind of, when I look back at it, I don't really remember. Like, I was a lot of it. I remember being very emotional and very, obviously, being not at my place. But they allowed me to stay in the hospital for 3 weeks. Oh, the girls were there. Yeah. So it was because I wasn't from there. And it was really, really amazing. Like, it was so good. I'm very grateful and thankful for them.
So they were only 34 weeks. Did they have any health complications or anything, or were they just little?
They were just little. At first they were working on Willow thinking that lungs. So they were on respiratory for the first 24 hours. And then actually they were meant to be on 24 hours, but they didn't, like, delivered at 3:40 in the afternoon, and they were off it by the morning. So
did you even get a chance to have like a steroid shot or anything to prep them? Because that happens, doesn't it?
They gave me one. So that's one thing I was worried, is their lungs. They gave me one shot. And they're like, we don't have time to wait for the next one. And I was like, what? Because I said to them, I'm like, oh, because I did some reading before. And I said, you meant to have two shots and it's meant to be 24 hours apart. And they're like, and my friend, he was like, you do not have time. He's like, you do not have time.
We need to get them out.
We need to get them out, because if I'm correct in saying it is a placenta abruption, he goes, we need them out. You could lose one. And I was like, okay, take them.
I'll just do it right now.
Yeah, he was right. So there was blood in her water. So in her, when they broke the sac, there was blood in there. So, yeah, the right call. Yeah.
Oh, so lucky. So is the biggest challenge just getting them to grow to be big enough to be allowed to leave, or was there anything else that happened while you're in hospital?
I was amazed. Like, I thought that there was going to be something else, but no, it was growing and sucking. So it had to be, they weren't sucking at first. Like,
oh, they'd have such tiny little mouths at that stage. Yeah, that'd be hard. Yeah.
The hardest thing for me was, like, I didn't get to hold them. It wasn't until the next day I got to touch them. And then it wasn't until later that day that I got to hold them. Like, it was, yeah. I watched other people, and other people got to touch their baby, like, that were in there, and everyone was like, oh, but their babies are like a different size to you.
How big were the girls?
So Frankie was 1.5 kilos. Yep. So that's just under 3 pounds, I think it is. And Willow was two kilos. So they're very tiny.
And how was it being at home with the two little ones and then being so small? Did you adapt easily, or was it a bit of a shock to the system?
It was a big shock. Luckily, I have an amazing family and a big family, because someone from my family stayed at my house every night. Like, I don't know how I would have got through the early months.
So 8 months in, I'm sure you must have some wonderful advice of what you wish you'd known before you came home with twins that you could impart on other people. What would that be?
You don't need that many, like, because my babies were preemie. I don't need that many clothes. and it's okay. And I didn't actually have that many. I only had a few, but it's okay, because it's okay not to have, you know, like 4 weeks worth of baby clothes. You know, I had like five or six, and that's okay, because they grow very quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, mine are only now just fitting in 2 zeros. Oh, so wow. So mine have stayed in their clothes a lot longer. But it's okay to, like, not worry about that. and sleep as much as you can before they come. That's hard, but because you won't get that sleep back. And it's okay to not have everything planned. So it works out. So, like, for me, you know, everyone kept saying, because I went to the parental classes and everyone was like, okay, so what's your birthing plan? And I was like, I really actually don't have one.
I'm going to go into spontaneous labor at 34 weeks at my great uncle's birthday, aren't I?
I was like, and I just said, I don't. And everyone, like, some of the mothers were like, really? What? Like, some people thought that was a bit crazy that I didn't have. And I was like, because I don't know what's going to happen. And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, I don't know. Like, I've got a high-risk pregnancy. I'm traveling to Newcastle every week. I could have them anytime, you know. And, yeah, and that actually was, I think, something that got me through is by not stressing and not, like, I try to not sort of let that bother me and go, just let it go. You know, I kind of was like, well, I've got no control of that. Like, that's something I can't control. I can't control when that's going to happen. But what I can do is I can control how I act if once it does happen. And so, and I basically, you know, I think I was an emotional wreck at first, and I probably shouldn't have been so, you know, I should have let go a little bit more. But I think, yeah, just by going, everything works out. Yeah, I think it just, and it does work out, and it's okay. Take a deep breath, because it will be fine. And then at the end, you just have these two perfect little angels, or baby, one baby. but yeah, so yeah, and I think if you, I don't know, I think that's probably the best advice I can give, is just try not to, I know it's hard, but try not to sort of stress so much.
Very hard to do sometimes.
It's very, very hard, but just sort of go, it's okay. And then take each day as it comes, I think. Take each day, because I know I didn't have a million bottles for it. I had two bottles for, and I had a pump, because I read somewhere that, you know, if I had them earlier, that like you should have a pump. So I got one of those. But you don't need absolutely everything. So I was looking at it like a list of everything that you need. I didn't, like, one of them said to get a haka. I went and got a haka. So I went and bought a haka. I've never used the haka once. Why did I buy that? Like, what a waste of money. And I took it out of its packet to, like, I even took it from its packet and washed it to have it ready, you know, for me. So I kind of got a lot of things ready that I didn't actually need to have ready. So I think you just need a bed. The only things I realized after my room wasn't where it was, you just need to, like, have a bed and a few things. And if you don't have it all, there's a shop there. Like,
yeah,
there is a shop. And, yeah, why did I get a haka? Like, why did I buy that?
Do you think you've changed as a person since you've become a mum on your own?
I think so. I actually think I'm a lot stronger than I thought I was.
Yeah.
So a lot of people said that I was, they're like, oh, it's good that you're doing this. But I was really worried. And I was like, I don't know how, I didn't know how I was going to do it. Like, I didn't know how I was going to be at home. And as I said, if I didn't have my family, I don't know how I would have done that. I really don't know. Because they were, you know, there were some nights that I was falling asleep and my mum was like, Trudy, like, wake up, you know. And, yeah, it's really having that support. And I do hear that there are, if you don't have that family support, there are agencies out there that, like night nurses and things, not night nurse, a night nanny or something it's called, I can't remember what it's called, but who can come in and actually help you. Mm. But talking to other mothers also, I didn't realise that, but talking to other twin mothers gives so much better advice than singleton mothers, unfortunately.
It's a whole new level of logistics and challenges that people with just one baby cannot comprehend, I don't think. I can't what it's like.
Well, I honestly thought that I'll just join a mother's group, like a single mother, like, you know, other babies around the same time that I'm having a baby, and I'll stay in that group. But I actually find joining a multiple group is so much more beneficial. Like, at first I was like, oh, it's a baby. Like, it's one, you know, it doesn't matter if it's one or two, like, but no, it does matter. And having that sort of, and having support other than just my family is good as well. So having, yeah, and I recommend not just having, yeah, your family, also having other, like, friends or other mother's group or something is very, very helpful. I find it that very helpful.
Have you got a network of other solo mums that you've created as well?
Not solo mums, no. So everyone in my I haven't met any other solo mums that I know. But in actually I do know one, but we haven't met up or anything. My mum, the only group that I sort of go to is the twin group, and they're all got a partner. You know, and some of the things they say, they look at me and they're like, I honestly don't know how you're doing this, because we, our partner does most of the things. And they're like, and you're just doing all this by yourself. And I'm like, I have to. Like, I've got no other option but to do it.
You just find a way, though, don't you? We're pretty resilient when it comes to stuff like that. We just find
You just got to find a way to cope. And but, yeah, no, but I haven't. And I don't know if there must be some sort of network in COFS for single mothers, but I haven't found it yet. But I'm finding it hard getting out anyway. So I'm finding it hard. Sort of, I've already got. I feel like I've got the twin mothers group. I just feel it's too much. But even making that is a challenge in itself. And I'm like, I just maybe when the twins get older, like I definitely will, because I want to. But no, I haven't really found. I guess. Solo mum sort of group thing, but there are there. I know they're there, and I know it would be helpful. But right now, I'm just too. I personally find it a bit too much at the moment.
I think at this stage, you're just existing and getting through the day as best you can, aren't you? Rather than add all these extra complexities on, which you can do when they're a bit older.
Yeah, and like I know that they're there, and I think it'll be very helpful. I run a drama school. I bought a pillow off another twin mum, and I didn't realize it was actually one of my ex students' mothers, and she had fostered twins, and she's a single mother, and she had fostered twins, and I was like, what? And so that was quite amazing. But she now has a partner, so I was like, well, you're not single anymore. I don't know if. Put her in that category or not. Yeah.
I think just going forward, when the girls get older, it's just important to have those networks of other parents with donor conceived children, so you can talk about those unique challenges when you have to start.
Yes, and
that's a little while away.
I definitely want to do that, and I definitely think that will be beneficial, because I don't know how to tell them as well. So, and that's enough. That's my next challenge. I was like, do I get a book or So that's something that I will be. My next sort of thing that I'll be researching and trying to find other ways of, how that happened. Like, how do you do that? Like, I don't know.
I was going to say, so if anyone else is thinking about going down this path and having kids with a donor by their own, what would you give advice to them?
There's a lot of research out there. I was actually overwhelmed with the amount of stuff there was. That's why I kind of just went, I'm just going to, you know, find an agency and go from there, or talk to someone that I know has done it.
Mm-hmm.
Because of much stuff there, and there's a lot of negative stuff as well. And so and I just sort of I would go to like somewhere like on a blog, listen to a blog, or like find actual articles, or find some of the nurses, especially at Monash, were lovely. Like, they explained everything really. So and very, very helpful. So I had heaps of questions, and especially with the donor process, and they answered everything for me. Yep. So they sent me the correct links and videos. So I wasn't actually randomly researching and then, you know, watching things. Like, I actually watched all of their links and videos, which was I found that really helpful. So that sort of culled and helped the research part of finding information. So having that source is very, very helpful. Having them sort of direct you in the right place, because when you Google things, like, a lot of stuff comes up. Like, you kind of got to know the right things to put in, and if you don't know, like, there were so many terms that I had no idea. Like, I didn't know about this. I didn't know what's the best move. And you know, they do testing on the donors. Like, why should I get a test for? Like, I had no idea why I needed to be tested. and asking questions. Don't be afraid to ask a question. Like, no question's a dumb question. There's just silly answers.
And would you recommend it?
Doing it? Yes, 100%. It was, you know, and it's like I watch now that I've had them, and I watch other people, other single mothers, and they say single mothers, but they've, you know, broken up with a partner, even at an earlier stage. Like, that in itself is really hard. Like, that's a hard process, and I don't have to deal with that. So, like, it's stressful enough raising children. Oh my goodness, the process is stressful enough. So it's actually good, because I know what I wanted. I knew that I wanted children, and finding someone was quite, like, you know, that's quite stressful in itself. And there's someone out there for me one day. I'm sure there is. Someone's out there. I'll find that right person one day, but just not now. And I'm ever grateful for my donor, because I've got two beautiful girls. But do it, 100% do it. If you're thinking about doing it, go ahead. Don't delay, because the older you get, the older your eggs get. I'm so blessed that it happened first go, but I was in and had the mindset that it would take longer. So I think that helped me not, you know, I think me going, you know what, it's just, you know, it won't happen this time, it'll happen next time. Like, having that, and I'm sure I may feel very different after, if I was doing it, say, six times or so. Like, I may have a different view on things. But, like, luckily I don't. But I'm very grateful. Yeah. And it's worth it. So I think, and then don't wait till you're too old, like, well, until you pass that, because I guess you get stuck in your own ways. So doing it, and I think if I did it like when I was 37, I probably would have so much more energy. So, you know, like, why did I wait? Do you know what I mean? Like, I, and plus the outcome could have been very different. Like, I could have had more kids by now, or it may not have worked, or I have no idea, but maybe don't put it off too long. Like, I do know some people who have in the same boat as me, and actually had always wanted to do it and thought about for years, same with me. And they waited till a bit later because they thought they would meet someone, and unfortunately it hasn't worked for them, and they've done several rounds. So yeah, my advice would be, like, after, like, talking to them about it, don't wait. Like, you know, if you know this is what you want and you know you want children, we have amazing doctors out there who have done this and found and is able to do this for us. Like, why not use it? You know, if you're ready, and doesn't matter. Like, I don't think you're ever ready, actually. it just happens. Oh, we're twins. No, I don't think I can prepare for that. But my mentality my whole life is, like, go with someone that you trust and that you're comfortable with, regardless of how much it's going to cost you. Because if you want a child at the end, if you go with someone that's cheaper and it takes you six times to get it, if you go with someone that's a bit more and it takes you one time, like, isn't it, I don't know. And maybe that whole journey, you know, I don't know, maybe that has something to do with, I don't know if it does, but it could do. I don't know. I think feeling comfortable is always the best way to go.
So lots of brilliant advice there, and a real life perspective of what life would be like if anyone's pregnant with twins at the moment as well.
That's pretty crazy.
So thank you so much for sharing, Trudy, and I can't wait for people to hear your episode.
Oh, thank you. Thanks.
I'm Alicia, and this is the No Need for Prince Charming podcast, bringing you stories of Australian solo mums who created their own happy ending. If you like what you heard, please follow or subscribe to make sure you don't miss out on future episodes, and leave a like, a review, or share with your friends to help others find it easier. Bye for now.